This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
I got to ask this because I never really had this, at least not, I'm nowhere near close to the level you did. I mean, I last stopped playing defense like my sophomore year of high school. I was a weak side linebacker.
Word.
And playing quarterback on the other side. And finally they're like, hey, you're pretty good. We're going to go ahead and just let you play quarterback. Yeah. All right. You probably looked across the line and could see it could be in a running back. It could have been on special teams. The absolute fear in some other man's eyes. Huh. What is that like?
Oh, man. I wouldn't say fear, but what you could see was indecision or maybe not a total belief. You know, it's interesting because when I had the opportunity before they forced me to take it off, which I wore a visor. And it wasn't for the look. I wore a visor because I'm a migrainer. And yeah. And sometimes bright light really jacks me up. So I would have on a visor. And I recall the most interesting responses or looks from guys that I ever got in my career was that time when I wore the visor and I didn't wear a mouthpiece. So I would be lining up, and I'm on the ball. They made me a stack linebacker, so they put me on the ball. I'm a strong side backer. I'm over top of a tackle, or I'm over top of a tight end. Now, rookie year, I ain't wear it, but my sophomore season in the league, I had it on. I could just remember I got to such a zone and how I was able to play against tight ends because you had to learn or get your ass kicked for the rest of the duration of your career. So I had to learn how to go hand-to-hand combat, something I had never did. I always played off the ball. But once I started figuring out how to assassinate dudes off the snap of the ball, I just recall I'd walk up to them, and once they start the cadence, I'd be like, here we go. And I start smiling, and then I start laughing before the ball be snapped. And you look at them; they be looking ahead, they be looking forward, because you know they don't want you to know that they're going to block you or where they're going. And when the ball would be snapped, and after the play would be finished, you know, you walk back to the huddle, and you're looking at the linemen, and they look at you like they, you know, a lot of times, more often than not, they'd be like, "What the F is wrong with you, man? Like, what is wrong with you, bro?" And then by the time we get to the game being over, Brady, you know, the conversation is like, dude, you are one bad mother effer, bro. Like, God bless you. Like, good luck. I hope you stay healthy because you're crazy. And yeah. I love that. I love being the dude that they thought he had no limits to how crazy he was, you know, and that was my thing, like, especially in the league because you did not have to wear a mouthpiece.
Right.
So I would lean down, you know, as a stack backer, you get down low enough where you're almost face to face with them because you're going to get a hold of their shoulder so you can set that edge. So you're basically face to face with a 300-pound man, a massive man, and I'm smiling at you. Like, and my teeth are white too. I got them porcelain veneers.
You got some pearly whites.
I veneered them up. You know what I mean? They said when you get money, don't change. But I did, and I went ahead and fixed my. You know, I had a couple gaps here and there, and I filled them in. And so I was smiling like crazy. So if I lost any of them, I'd have been able to replace them real easily. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
I digress. Speaking of, if you lost something, the health of Dak Prescott, Brady. Let's jump into this and let's talk about this. What seemingly just looked like a minor strain and, you know, it's the last drive of the game. Turns out they're still dealing with, are they going to be able to play Dak Prescott this weekend and the upcoming game? Now, the reports have said, and if CeeDee Lamb is, if his game is, or his, better yet, his, if his medical eye is as good as his football eye, then Dak Prescott should be good because all accounts given by him, he says that, you know, Dak looks normal. Dak is Dak. He's ready to go. But, you know, Mike McCarthy is saying he needs to clear a couple more protocols before he's through the threshold of being able to play against Minnesota on Sunday's game. So what's your take on this? Is this much to do about nothing, or, you know, how are you looking at it?
what's Thursday, right? And so you're getting into the beef of the preparation, the
correct.
Beef of
excuse
that
me.
Week,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
as we start jeez. Preparing.
yeah.
And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what teams do.
Uh-oh.
So when you're playing someone, right, you're looking for some tea leaves. You're mm-hmm. looking for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And someone hasn't gotten CeeDee Lamb the memo.
Okay.
Because CeeDee Lamb's out here basically telling you what's going to happen.
Right.
He's talking about Dak Prescott. He was quoted as saying, he looks great.
Right.
In and out of his drops. To me, he looks perfectly fine. That was CeeDee Lamb after
practice.
I see
what you're doing. Yep.
CeeDee Lamb also wanted to go ahead and comment on Michael Gallup, who's dealing with some calf strains. He got a lot of calf strains there in Dallas. And you know, he's commenting on him. He'll be back in no time. I'm not worried about it. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, dude,
stop.
Someone's got to tell you, like, you don't want to provide Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota Vikings anything.
On
like your
Thursday.
Head coach.
On
your
Thursday.
Head yeah.
Right.
Your head coach is out here talking about hurdles. You're out here giving out the injury report. Oh, no, man, he's good. It was crashing there. He looks great in his job. He'll be perfect. Like,
right.
Let them think there's a chance that someone else will have to come in behind Dak. Let them think there's a chance that maybe Michael Gallup's not going to suit up. I'd add to that very talented, you know, roster of wide receivers. I mean, this dude is funny as hell, but the reality is I think he'll be fine. He's had enough time now to recover from this. But, you know, the other thing is if you're worried about Dak, shouldn't you be worried about Trayvon Diggs? You know, he was limited in practice as well this week.
Right.
He's been phenomenal this year as far as getting his hands on football.
He's got to be the lead for defensive MVP, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he's the lead for defensive player of the year. I just think it comes down to because it's going to one of two things is going to happen the rest of the year. Teams are either going to stop throwing at him or because of his style of play, which, I mean, take into account, for example, the New England Patriots game. Remember he's got the interception, right, which ended up being, I think, a pick six he ended up taking or taking down close.
Yep.
And then what happened the following drive? He gambles again, should have stayed on top, and then gave one up.
Yep.
I mean, if he wants to be that type of player, sure, he's going to have a ton of picks. But teams are also going to double move him. They're going to scheme some things up to be able to take advantage of that. So I think he's up for defensive player of the year, statistically looking at it. We'll see if that holds. Because, you know, when people start talking about the best cornerbacks in the league, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone better than Marshawn Lattimore for the New Orleans Saints. Now,
Truth. He
did just give up, you know, a big play to DK Metcalf, but, you know, it wasn't like he was that far off from that guy. I mean,
yeah, and that's DK Metcalf.
That's DK Metcalf. That's a big
right.
man.
Yeah.
That's a tough matchup. And that was pretty much one of the only things he really allowed in that game. But the reality is this, like, and you know this, like the best, like Champ Bailey, you play with Champ.
Yes, I did.
You didn't throw at Champ, man. Like Champ was that good where you're like, I might test him once or twice or something. But for the most part, the best cornerbacks, we say they're out on the island because they are on vacation. Like they've got their deal locked down so they can sip that Mai Tai and sit out there. They don't have to worry about the guy that they're covering because no one's throwing their way anyway.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so this team could easily be undefeated. Where they're at right now.
Yeah.
They have, what, 5 wins, 1 loss, that 1 loss being in the first game against Tampa Bay. And if you recall, they could have won that game.
Yep.
And so this could easily be an undefeated team. How important is this Minnesota game? I mean, it seems like their schedule is moderately, you know, doable. I mean, they get through, if they're able to get through Minnesota, you got Denver. I don't know that we think Denver is as good as we originally thought they were. I mean, they're kind of like a second, maybe even borderline third tier team.
They've fallen off of late.
Yeah, right. The Falcons are fighting, but they're still an average team. The Kansas City Chiefs, you would have thought that this is a hard one for them. And I know you may defend this and say, hey, it's Kansas City, and I wouldn't disagree with you. But for the moment, this is not a good team as well.
They put the Jets this week, so I mean.
Well, and so now they could get back on track. But with that being said, I mean, I don't know how long that goes for. But then you're talking about an interesting little 2-game stretch with the Vegas Raiders and with the Saints. So perceivably, you're talking about 1, 2, 3. I don't want to say 4 with Kansas City, but maybe it's a possible in the sense that the way they're playing right now.
Kansas City doesn't play the Jets. That's the Bengals who are going to put a whooping on them.
Jeez.
Chiefs play the Giants.
Okay, they're playing. Well, I mean, the Giants are coming off of a good victory, but I don't know that. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see if Kansas City messes around with that one.
It's a 9.5-point spread, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, what does this – I mean, this Dallas team – and I know this might sound crazy. This Dallas team could be pushing towards a one seed in the NFC.
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think if you think about it, they've only played two divisional games. So I would say – if you look at the rest of their division, like they're 5-1 now. I don't know that they beat the Vikings. This will be a tough matchup for them. And okay. By the way, I think it's more important for Minnesota than it is for Dallas. And the reason is Minnesota is largely looked at as a wild card team right now. They're 3-3.
Yep.
The Packers are rolling. I don't know if the Packers win tonight, but you know they're dealing with some different circumstances. They're still going to win the NFC North.
Okay.
So it's more important for the Vikings to win for their hopes and chances
keep pace.
Be able to stay a wild card team at this point. For Dallas, you know, it's not pivotal only because to me they might sweep the division. I don't know who you feel like based on how Dallas has played this year or who you're confident in being able to take them down within their division. And it's usually tough to go 6-0 in your division. You know, 5-1 probably is more realistic,
but think about
NFC East. That's 9 wins in the NFC East. If they sweep them and they win their 4 other divisional games, they only need a few more in order to be in that conversation for the number one overall seed. So, to your point, I think when you look at the Dallas Cowboys in comparison to the Washington football team, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Giants, who are all sitting at 2-5,
they can win it.
Yeah. They got a clear path now to going to the number one seed. The biggest thing would be, obviously, the Buccaneers are 6-1.
Yep.
They need the Bucs to drop a couple of games.
Yep.
You know, they need to obviously, you know, have the better overall record, which I think, you know, there's a great chance that Dallas, because of how weak that division is, and you look at the NFC South, for example, in comparison, you've got the Saints, who are a wild card team right now.
Yep.
The Atlanta Falcons, who have come on of late. They've won 2 in a row. Matt Ryan's playing better. Kyle Pitts is showing out. They're 500. And you got the Panthers, who've completely fallen off. They've lost 4 in a row. But still, like, that just looks like an overall better division, more competition. Like, Saints, Bucks, they play this week.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. Never say never when you got a Sean Payton coach team.
I've told you that. I think Sean Payton is comfortable with how he schemes against Tampa. They might have not have should have been better than them or beat them last season, but they did twice, and they did handily. I think that's a matchup. That's style matchup points in terms of Sean Payton versus Tampa Bay and how he feels about them. So that could be a slide right there. That could be a loss.
So to your point, I think Dallas – if they don't mess it up, right? They got to stay healthy. They can't mess it up.
Right.
But there's no doubt they are on a path to maybe being the number one overall seed in the NFC, which would be kind of crazy. Because, I mean, I think if you think about where this team was last year with Mike McCarthy, how bad the defense was with Mike Nolan struggling too, and then Dak Prescott getting hurt, it was a different conversation. But to turn it around in year two, be number one overall, going to the playoffs, that would be pretty incredible.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I've never heard of something like this at the college level. LSU's head coach Ed Orgeron, that everybody knows, go Tigers, says that. Well, I guess he ain't doing that anymore, huh? He's probably kind of cooled off on that a little bit. But basically citing that his team is not healthy enough for a full padded practice this week, saying that, you know, they're not able to do what they would normally do practice-wise because they're so banged up. Not enough players to go in full pads. Now, it is an open week, but it leads up into a big matchup for them in terms of taking on Alabama. I'm wondering, is this a smoke screen? Is this a smoke signal? Because in college, you got over 100, what is it, like 118 dudes that walk out on the practice field during the course of the week? I mean, if you got starters out, I get that. But aren't you supposed to have good enough recruiting classes where you have three depth charts, like three, four depth charts of players that could come out and actually practice. Wouldn't this be a great time to see, hey, this is a great tailback, but he's hurt. So let's see if this tailback or this one is good. This offensive lineman or defensive lineman or cornerback, whatever the position, they're down. But this is a great opportunity to see these younger guys or guys that haven't played as much, see if they can get onto the field. I just have never heard an admission of information at the college level where you don't have enough guys to go full pads. That sounds weird.
No, it is a bit weird. Usually on off weeks, too, you're working on developing some of those younger players, the guys who don't have as much experience. So kind of surprising. But, you know, when you do that, a lot of that has to do, too, with building for the future.
That's true.
What is the future?
Right.
When you've already announced your head coach is going to be returning after the season. So they made this decision. They wanted him to stay on and finish it out. And, you know he's not going to be the guy. That's kind of one of those deals where when you make a decision to fire a head coach and you've got an interim guy, you know, players are thinking, all right, this guy could be it. He could end up getting hired to this job, right? Ed Orgeron found himself in that position at USC. And I think you get players to play for you maybe because not only is the coach potentially coaching for that job, the players want to play because they think they're maybe potentially playing for that next head coach. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, you know that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Like, you know Ed Orgeron isn't going to be the guy, and they're moving on after this year. So I think there's a lot of dynamics here at play. I think the first thing is they have been riddled with injuries. You know, Miles Brennan, the quarterback who was in a battle in the spring with Max Johnson, broke his arm before preseason camp. You've got two All-American cornerbacks, Derek Stingley, who may be the best in the country, along with Eli Ricks. Both those guys have been sidelined and are out. They're leading receivers out, a bunch of other guys up front on their defensive front. So there's some injuries, but here's the other thing that you're starting to see in college football, and I think you're going to see it more often, is players who have the ability to play at the next level. And as I talked about, Derek Stingley, Eli Ricks, both those cornerbacks, for example, two of the best in the SEC. Stingley may be the best in the country. They're getting ready to play on Sundays.
Right.
Like, Stingley's draft eligible. And I think what happens is if you're a player now in college football and your team is out and you don't have a shot at winning your conference, you don't have a shot at winning a national championship,
I'm out.
You're out. You know, you're out. Like, you've got an injury that, yeah, it's going to nag and linger the rest of the season, or you're just opting out the rest of the season.
It's done. Yeah,
that's the reality. So, right. You know, not only does Ed Orgeron in a normal year have to battle that if your team's not on a national championship run like they were a couple of years ago, but now, given the fact that they've already said, hey, he can't come back, why would any player on that team that's draft eligible want to hang around for their university when all they're playing for at this point is pride? They're not winning the SEC. They're not winning a national championship. You know, who knows who's going to come in there next and how that will change the culture and who they're playing for. But at this point, you know, a lot of guys start looking in the mirror and saying, I'm more concerned about my well-being and my future than I am my team. And you might say, listening to this, like, man, that's not right. That's not what football is about. And you're right to a degree. Like, that's not what football is about. It's the ultimate team sport.
Once you join the team, and then once the team is still a team, it's still the ultimate team sport. But go
right.
Ahead. Go ahead.
But the reality is, too, you know, these young men have the opportunity for generational, you know, life-changing money.
Yeah.
And that's the difference is, you know, you'd do the same thing if you were in their shoes. You could say you wouldn't, but when you get put in that situation and you're putting your body on the line, and that goes a long way in how much money you can make, where you get drafted, you'd be thinking the same thing too. So unfortunately, I think for Ed Orgeron, for LSU, you know, they got time before they play Alabama, who I believe is their next opponent.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's going to be tough to keep those guys as motivated, to keep those guys as dialed in, given how this season has gone, given what the future looks like right now, and Ed Orgeron not being a part of it.
There may be, You have to people have to understand this. Ed Orgeron is not losing his job because of his inability to recruit or coach or win games, right?
It happened after the national championship, but right. Here's what I never understood. How he didn't get a pass the year after, in particular, they won. They had so many guys move on to the pros, to the next level.
Yeah.
Like, what'd you think was going to happen? They're going to reload. They had the greatest single season
ever.
We've probably ever seen.
Yes.
And so what do you think the next year, even if they had a successful year, it wouldn't look like the greatest season ever in college football history. And people, well, you know, there's 9-8 or whatever the record is after they won a national championship. I'm like, give me a break. Yeah. You had COVID. You had all these players who left to go on to the NFL. And you wanted him to turn around and win another one? Like, that wasn't happening. I mean, the whole thing about it, if it was about his off-the-field conduct, then just say it. Just say that's why we're moving on from him.
Because
we feel like he did
else.
Some things. Yeah, I mean, look at his win-loss record.
Yeah.
You're going to try to find another coach to come in and replicate that and win a national championship with Nick Saban still in the SEC West. Good luck with that.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this is a gift that continues to keep giving. At the owners' meetings, Raiders owner Mark Davis says people deserve a written report of the Washington football team investigation. Now, this breaks ranks, obviously, due to the fact that, well, if one guy goes down to something like this, you'd have to assume it makes other owners susceptible to possibly the same type of situations playing out. Brady, what do you make of this Davis coming out and speaking out about it? And apparently he spoke out about it for about 12 minutes. And it was a back and forth conversation, but he talked about John Gruden. He talked about the reports, he talked about the allegations, and he feels as though there needs to be a written report that's provided to the public.
And I think that's fair. You know, as much as the NFL wants to claim that they want to keep those who step forward, who want to remain anonymous and respect their privacy, I get that. You can still, you know, provide a detailed report on the other findings from that. You know, it's hard to believe in 650,000 emails, the only thing they came up with were emails about John Gruden.
Mm-hmm.
That seems
and were
shocking.
Released.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
only you came up with it, but you released them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which yeah, I mean, and that's kind of another side tangent or conversation, but I would just say the NFL can and act like they're not going to, and they can play this game all they want. It would be better if they just went ahead, satisfied the call of Mark Davis, satisfied the calls of many out there who want to see or want to have more come to light based on the organization that is the Washington football team, the toxic culture that was. I think they would like to take a peek behind the scenes and at least have something more put out there publicly from what this investigation was. I mean, they're getting pressure from all sides. Politicians, you know, former employees. I mean, obviously owners of other teams. And I think the concern is this, is Mark Davis feels slighted because they came and they took his head coach.
For something he had nothing to do with.
He had nothing to do. That was collateral damage, right?
Right.
You know, this all came about from a lawsuit between Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen. And in discovery, you end up coming to find, you know, these emails, and that ends up finding its way to the public's eye. And now we find ourselves in this situation where John Gruden ends up being collateral damage and all of it. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, his dismissal and firing and all that, you know, wasn't necessarily justified based on his conduct, but that was, you know, that's for another time, and we've talked about that at length. Mm-hmm. But I think Mark Davis feels at this point like, hey, man, you know, we're sitting atop of the AFC West. Like, we're on a roll right now. We feel like we're in a good spot. We moved to Las Vegas, and you come after, and just we end up being the downfall of an investigation to another team? Yeah, I want that to be public. But I think the hard thing is the NFL is all about precedent. And once you set the precedent where they have to make this public, which was it was a private investigation, but they have to let this come to the public eye, that sets the map moving forward where any situation like this, there's going to be calls for it. There's going to be precedent for it. And I think that's where Roger Goodell and the NFL are in a tough position right now.
But doesn't that make you feel like they're more of a target? I feel like they become more of a target in a situation like this. They did only an oral report on its findings. Only an oral report, not a written one. And then the commissioner comes out on Tuesday and basically says that, listen, the report will not be released. And it's not going to be released due to any type of public pressure. It's just not going to be released. To me, when you're talking about that's somebody's daughter, those are daughters that jumped on trains to go to New York and hand out information about what they're seeking and what took place and wanting to have the rest of the emails come out. Speaking of the cheerleaders who went there and was on site for the owners' meetings, you're talking about a head coach who his job is or his reputation has been tarnished and basically ruined for the rest of his life off of emails that were released. I almost feel as though when you're looking at this from the outside in, and some of that outside in could be employees at other organizations. And if you're looking at how this is being handled, you're seeing that the common person could possibly be, through interpretation, not valued enough to have a written report, not valued enough to give a report for release to put this to bid. No matter how bad it would be, no matter how ugly it would get, you would assume that the NFL from certain angles would address this differently with more sensitivity, with more empathy towards the people that were involved in all of this stuff that's taking place. Now, granted, this was not an investigation for that where these emails came out. These were investigations against Bruce Allen and I guess all of the things that took place under the lead of Bruce Allen. But Brady, you got to believe that there's got to be other people from other organizations that are rallying together. Like, listen, if we allow this to happen to them in Washington, then that means there's no way for us to have a voice. There's no way for us to have, you know, a healthy workplace. If there's an environment around the league where this type of environment may have or does exist.
I think the hard thing about this is more the fact that Roger Goodell works for the owners. So he works for Mark Davis. You know, that's part of how he's paid. That's part of what his job or obligations are. And when you've got one owner who's like saying, hey, this is what you need to do, it's more like he's telling him that. You know, he's not asking. He's telling him. And I do wonder how many other owners out there are telling Roger Goodell in his other ear, yeah, you can't let this happen. You know, you can't let this happen. Because, by the way, I do believe there's a written report from Beth Wilkinson. I don't think it was just all oral. It's just they're not going to make the written report that was done by Beth Wilkinson public. And that's typically the case. But, again, it's more to me about the precedent of this whole deal, where once you open up Pandora's box.
Who did it, though? Who did Beth Wilkinson do it for? Because I don't think it was for the NFL. That might have been an independent pay report. But go. Nonetheless, don't worry about that. But I wonder where that report came from. Was that internal, or was that independent?
Well, no. I mean, it doesn't. Well, I guess you could make the philosophical argument, right? Like, you know, a company hires a law firm to do a external audit or investigation, right? But wait, who's paying that law firm?
Yeah,
oh, it's the company that's doing it. So how could they ultimately be unbiased in some way, right?
Yeah.
How could they not find something? Yeah.
But because they're hiring an independent investigator. That's
correct.
That's, yeah.
But like the hiring is the more important part, not the part where you're independent afterwards, right?
Yeah.
If you're independent, you're like, oh, yeah, no, they don't have anything to do with the team outside of being paid by them. Like, I always find it, I mean, not to get off on a tangent, I always find it hilarious when, like, people hire a consultant.
Yeah.
Like, how many consultant agencies are going to be hired, do their job, do their due diligence, and come back and go, you know what? You guys are doing everything perfectly fine. Like, there's
just
no issues.
Just keep paying
here.
Me to make sure that it's going perfectly fine the entire time.
Like, let me just give you a check here. I'll take my check, but you guys are doing everything great. We don't have any suggestions for you. Like, how many companies or organizations does that actually happen? Never. Because if you're being paid to find something, you're going to find something. Like, that's your job. You're going to do something. You're going to have, you know, you're going to find something. So, in this case, I think what Mark Davis wants is what a lot of people want, is they want more of this to come to light. They don't feel like whatever is going on with Dan Snyder is, you know, obviously enough just because he stepped away from the team for 4 months and they've made some changes within the structure of their organization. There's a lot of people who don't feel like that's enough, like they should be punished more. And I don't blame them. You know, from your stories, from many other reports and things we've seen from former employees, it does seem like that's fair. I mean, hell, from minority owners who've come out and said that. I think it's going to be tough, though, because, again, it's all about precedent. And if once the league would open up and officially release this, it would be tough because any action afterwards, right, by a team that would have an issue like this, they would be subject to that. They'd call for it because they'd look back and point to, hey, the Washington football team released the Beth Wilkinson report. You know, or they released a summary of that. Now you have to do that. And I don't think any of these organizations want that.
Hey, so the Washington football team owner, his wife, who's sitting in, you know, for Dan Snyder, was in front of all of the owners and apologized to the room that the league has suffered as a result of this investigation. What do you think that looked like or felt like, Tanya, in that room full of sharks, listening to what she had to say about the Washington football team? I mean, that had to have been an intense moment.
Had to have been.
Right?
I could only imagine. I mean, that's to be a fly on the wall in these meeting rooms for me, it'd be incredible. But
I bet you it gets real up in them meetings, bro.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.